is a Panacheva reminder to make sure you only practice what certified instructors have taught you. Bad skills are like viruses and can spread through unregulated teaching. They cause confusion by destroying the standard and can lead to misplaced confidence in ungrounded practice. Remember, unlicensed knowledge is pornography. Certification is security.
By listening to this, you should be advised you're violating your listener's license agreements. You could be subject to suspension of your listener's license. You should disconnect now if you've come across this by accident.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Was dying if they said this on the news, if they would clarify the picture instead of seeking to confuse. If you could see the ice caps melting, if you could watch the oceans rise, if you could see the consequences right before your eyes. If you knew the kids were dying, if you could look inside the river where their food comes from, filled with cyanide. If you could hear the parents pleading, if they were looking right at you, if you could see the anguish in their hearts. What if you knew?
Extremely dangerous questions, because with our present knowledge we have no idea what would happen. Even now, man may be unwittingly changing the world's climate through the waste products of his civilization. Due to our release through factories and automobiles every year of more than 6 billion tons of carbon dioxide, which helps air absorb heat from the sun, our atmosphere seems to be getting warmer.
This is bad.
Well, it's been calculated a few degrees rise in the Earth's temperature would melt the polar ice caps. And if this happens, an inland sea would fill a good portion of the Mississippi Valley. Tourists in glass-bottomed boats would be viewing the drowned towers of Miami through 150 feet of tropical water. Foreign weather, we're not only dealing with forces of a far greater variety than even the atomic physicist encounters, but with life itself.
I've just come back from Los Angeles. I was down there to meet with a group of rather important people, people in the movie industry, scientists, and so on, who were considering calling a congress of the best minds in the world to meet in Los Angeles in the near future to be a kind of planetary alarm conference. They wanted scientists and statesmen, religious leaders, and to do something to impress upon the world through all the media that we are in very serious danger of destroying the biosphere, that is to say, the whole envelope of living creatures which covers this planet, through pollution, overpopulation, nuclear fallout, poisoning of our food, and very lack of food. And we met to discuss the problem of organizing this conference, and here were all these brilliant people. And it came over us that we really didn't know what we ought to say. I mean, you can scream and create a state of panic, but that won't do any good. And when it came down to it, we didn't know what we ought to say because we really don't know what to do. Some things that we might do, for example, to increase the food supply with high-yield crops, may be ecological mistakes. And so the consensus of almost everybody at the meeting was that in some way or other, the human race has to learn how to leave the world alone and let what is called the natural homeostasis, that is, the self-balancing process of nature, take care of the mess.
Each of us all across this great land has a stake in maintaining and improving environmental quality. Clean air and clean water, the wise use of our land, the protection of wildlife and natural beauty, parks for all to enjoy. These are part of the birthright of every American. To guarantee that birthright, we must act, and act decisively. It is literally now or never.
Our program will emphasize conservation. The amount of energy being wasted, which could be saved, is greater than the total energy that we are importing from foreign countries. We will also stress development of our rich coal reserves in an environmentally sound way.
What?
The natural world is dying. This may sound dramatic, but I think it's a perfectly realistic statement to make, and I'm not the only person who makes it. And it is dying fast. So fast that at current trends, much of it will cease to be capable of supporting complex forms of life like human beings in a matter of decades.
Now, it seems to me that if we would concentrate on resolving the problems of the automobile, the combustion engine, the pollution factor, and we've gone a long way in that. I think of myself as an environmentalist.
We all know that human activities are changing the atmosphere in unexpected and in unprecedented ways.
I recommend that we adopt a BTU tax on the heat content of energy as the best way to provide us with revenue to lower the deficit, because it also combats pollution, promotes energy efficiency, promotes the independence economically of this country, as well as helping to reduce the debt. And it is environmentally responsible. It will help us in the future as well as in the present with the deficit.
Business as usual.
So, for example, with carbon trading, big business is able to invest in some kind of enterprise, say in China, which is probably not very green, and where they're likely to make substantial profits. And by investing in that, they're purchasing a number of carbon credits. The value of those credits is equivalent to a certain amount of emission. So what they can say is, having purchased that number of credits, that is equivalent to a certain amount of greenhouse gases that we've reduced. So then they can put on their books that they've actually reduced their emissions by a certain amount. And because they've spent a certain amount of money on carbon credits, when actually all they've done is invested in an enterprise to make profits and used the image of that investment as a green investment to say that we've reduced our carbon emissions. And in fact, they may well be increasing carbon emissions. So this bonanza of profiteering has been going on for the last few years.
Millions of small farmers, forced into debt and unable to farm their degraded land, have migrated to the cities. Most end up here in the slums. There's little chance of ever getting out. Everywhere, you can see for yourself, there's dirt, there's stagnant water, cesspools, choked up drains. Significantly enough, next to it is a garbage dump. These people don't reside here out of choice. Most are here because of so-called development. The slum, I think, can be regarded as the ultimate symbol of the industrializing world. It is the human garbage dump.
Happiness.
slime and darkness it comes to inflict its life-destroying poison on the careless, the unwary, the unprotected. No sane person would deliberately expose himself to it. Yet today, young people are flirting with a poison every bit as deadly as
civilization.
The United States is committed to strengthening our energy security and confronting global climate change. And the best way to meet these goals is for America to continue leading the way toward the development of cleaner and more energy efficient technology.
We've got to leave this planet at least as good as the planet we inherited from our parents, but we've got a bigger problem with climate change. We sent $1 billion to foreign nations, many of them hostile, and because of our addiction to oil, and in the bargain we're melting the polar ice caps, changing the weather patterns all around the globe.
These are not very bright guys, and things just got out of hand. And that really sort of sums it up. The system began to use sort of the mechanicalistic discoveries and technical science stuff to create weapons, to create things that would control nature, that people would buy, like TVs and entertainment systems and stuff. And it just began to grind up the natural world to produce all of this stuff in an attempt to have a certain kind of control. Even though control is really impossible in the system, living in a kind of cooperative arrangement with nature is not something that has been in that framework at all.
When you believe the current system is the best we have, and when you believe that the war on terror is just a war against crazy barbarians that hate us because of our freedom and our way of life, then you're out of touch with reality. And you don't really get the systemic causes of what's going on. So when policymakers see things like climate change, peak oil, the economic crisis, or the fact that we're reaching limits in food production, they try to deal with them in isolation, instead of recognizing that these crises are fundamentals of a failing global system. Because of this ideology, because of these subliminal ideas, we're straitjacketed, and we're unable to respond in the way that we need to. Recognizing that we need not just tinkering, but transformation of the system.
The science is clear that man-made emissions of air pollution and global warming gases are changing.
Global warming is still an issue that the scientists are still debating, and you know it, and I know it.
The debate on the causes of climate change are far from settled.
Well, the climate's always changing. That's not the fundamental question. The fundamental question is whether man-made activity is what's contributing most to it.
I think CO2 is a problem, and therefore I don't think it needs to be regulated.
We all breathe CO2. Climate changes, but there's no evidence at all that it's man-made CO2 that causes the climate to change.
My view, having looked at a lot of these trends, is that some of the most worrying predictions are most likely to be true. If you look at these things in their totality, what we're seeing is industrial civilization is unsustainable. And all of these different crises are really just different manifestations of the fact that this civilization in its current form cannot survive the 21st century.
The idea of human-induced global climate change is one of the greatest hoaxes perpetrated out of the scientific community. It is a hoax.
I'm only concerned about the incredible frenzy and hype for something that's a total myth. It's amazing to me how upset so many people are. The existence of all these billions of people on Earth have all influenced the climate of Earth, but none of it is of significance, and thank goodness, things are doing just fine.
Why is the picture of the world painted by conventional knowledge all wrong? As I realized much later, it is wrong because it is designed to justify the industrial system, and it is the industrial system itself which is the source of the global environmental crisis we face today.
The first generation of pollution is what we are dealing with in terms of climate change. It is basically burning of fossil fuels and putting pollutants into the air. Originally, we could see it all. Then they learned ways to not have these smokestacks. A lot of it is now invisible, but it's still there. And climate change is all linked to that first generation pollution. The second generation pollution was chemicals. toxics that were put out. Rachel Carson's work was up to that. The third generation of pollution is tampering with living systems at the genetic level, introducing genes that don't belong to those plants, and then the fact that plants hybridize, the wind blows, the pollinators pollinate, means that these traits that have been introduced then spread through normal biological processes and normal ecological processes, and then they enter plants where they don't belong.
The greatest hoax, I think, has been around in many, many years, if not hundreds of years, has been this hoax on the environment and global warming. You notice they don't call it global warming
anymore. No. It's because it's getting cooler.
It's weather control.
Yeah, it's getting cooler. You can't call it global warming anymore.
So what we need, what the world needs, is more fossil fuels. The evidence we have is not just that fossil fuels aren't ruining our planet, they're making it much better. Climate-related deaths are going down. So what we need is many, many more fossil fuels so that people can eat and they can have food.
Cities turning into wastelands. Everybody moved in lures. The sun was killing anyone left outside.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents in thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Good planets are what? Hard to find. Good planets are in demand. Clean beaches and sparkling sands and the land masses. Room to spare, that's good, yeah. Jet streams and perfect air. High forests and low wetlands are good planets are in demand. And the mind don't know, and the heart can't see. Let the blind man go to his destiny. Yeah. Good planets are rare indeed. Rain falling on crops and seed. Big rivers and good topsoil. Fuel sources from cane to oil. Green garden all that we need. Good planets are rare indeed. Alright.
It strikes me more and more that our failure to feel at home in this astonishing brain in which we live is the result of a basic initial mistake in our thinking about the world, and is in turn the cause of what is beginning to look like the failure of our technology. Of the fact that everything we're doing to try to improve the world was a success in the short run, made amazing initial improvements, but in the long run, we seem to be destroying the planet by our very efforts to control it and improve it.
Thank you for being conscientious. A visual record is being taken and filed with the Department of Biological Flow.
Why do you think that U.S. policymakers are more concerned with Obamacare and just this other political squabbling, partisanship, than the systematic destruction of the globe, especially with the U.S. just becoming number one in oil and gas production?
Well, it's not just for that reason. It's that they are incapable. They are sociopaths. They are psychopaths. And they are completely and utterly disconnected from the fact that we only have one planet on which to live, and we all live here together. And if we don't save our ecosystem, our habitat, there's no hope for anything in the future. It's not just extreme short-sightedness. This I would call evil, but I think in a broader philosophical sense, looking back across the whole history of the Earth and all of human civilization, this is truly the death of a meme, a mindset. It's all the stuff that most people accept as being a given before they try to analyze. And that meme is dying, and it's breaking free from that meme. It's a war for consciousness.
Everybody knows something's wrong with our world. Everybody knows something's wrong with our culture. And I'm quoting Einstein. You know, he said, we can't solve the problems facing us with the same kind of thinking we were doing when we caused them to begin with. One of the things he was realizing is this reductive, sort of mechanicalistic, rational, controlling approach to the world was a real problem. What most people don't get is when he says we have to use a different kind of thinking, what he means is we can't use linear reductionism. We have to use something else entirely. And the one thing that leads to a different kind of thinking is feeling.
We've known what was coming for a long time. In 1847, George Perkins Marsh, naturalist and ambassador, a combination you hardly ever hear about these days, naturalist and ambassador George Perkins Marsh in 1847 predicted that if we burn fossil fuels, we're going to warm up the atmosphere. A half a century later, Svante Arrhenius, in April of 1896, wrote a paper predicting that if we keep burning fossil fuels, we're going to experience a 1 degree centigrade temperature increase as global average in about 2000. 104 years in advance, he missed by 0.15 degrees. Not bad. We've had warnings for a while. In 1987, the undersecretary for the Navy said that if we keep burning fossil fuels, we could expect human extinction within a few decades. A few decades later, and what do you know, we're there.
Most people out here have, well, that we all live in cars. Most of them don't run anymore. We're on foot a lot of the time. Try to stay down during the day, go out mostly at night. Even with the sunscreen, it doesn't really help. Apparently they used to make sunscreen as a... Sunscreen was a lotion. Today there's actually a fabric called sunscreen.
It's not merely capitalism, it's socialism too. It's every ism you want. It's civilization. It's civilization. The first civilizations arose a few thousand years ago, seven of them simultaneously on different continents. And at that moment, civilization became a cul-de-sac. It became a death trap. It became a patriarchal set of living arrangements that drove us into human population overshoot. And civilization was a cul-de-sac, but it wasn't a one-way street. In fact, there are at least three cultures, the Mimbres, the Olmec, and the Chaco, that when civilization failed, and here I'll use the example of the Mimbres near where I live, the Mimbres gained access to a cheap energy source known as maize or corn nearly 1,000 years ago after having lived in the area for about 10,000 years. And within 20 years, they were so deep in human population overshoot, and then they had a drought, and they ate the seed corn. 20 years after they began civilization by growing grains, they collapsed catastrophically, and a few survivors walked away. And the survivors that came back didn't do corn ever again. They didn't do civilization. They didn't store grains to get them through the hard times. The Olmec did the same thing. The Membres, the Chaco, all these cultures collapsed. And when they returned from that, they went back to hunting and gathering, not to civilization. Industrial civilization is a one-way street. Industrial civilization, we can't go back anymore since 1939, since we invented nuclear Armageddon. There's no going back. If we cease this set of living arrangements at this point, the world's 400 and some nuclear power plants melt down catastrophically and we're all dead in a month. So we can't terminate industrial civilization until we shut down the nuclear power plants. It takes at least 20 years to decommission a nuclear power plant. There was a panel in New York City last weekend, which included the recent ex-head of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in this country, and they concluded that it would take at least 60 years to decommission Indian Point, the nuclear power plant right outside of New York City. At least 60 years. So we can't see civilization that is making us fat, making us sick, and killing us, because if we do, we're all dead in a short period of time. Consider, for example, Fukushima Daiichi. At Fukushima Daiichi, they're going to try to move the 1,223 spent fuel rods from the pools 5 stories above ground in a pool of water. They're going to try to move those. The unbelievably incompetent organization, TEPCO, is going to try to move those. So we can't reverse industrial civilization at this point. It took me a long time to figure that out. So we have to maintain industrial civilization, which is killing us through climate change. So getting at the root, it's all about civilization, and it's a trap. And at this point, it's a one-way street. It's a trap, and we're already caught. There's no escape.
So really, I guess the way to think about agriculture, or one way to think about it, is that it's a way of turning ecosystems into people. Because an agricultural ecosystem, well, that's another oxymoron. Agriculture does not support ecosystem function. You're losing soil, you're not creating anywhere near as much oxygen, you're not sequestering very much carbon dioxide, there's very little biodiversity. Farmers don't like biodiversity. I mean, in theory they do, but they're actual practices. And I know I'm beating up on farmers, and I will say the old cliche, some of my best friends really are farmers. And I love farming. And I love the whole idea of making your living on the land. And I grow a lot of food. So it really, it hurt to begin finding these things and really seeing that agriculture, by definition, can't be made sustainable because this is what it does. This is a former rainforest that's now being used to produce ethanol and sugarcane. So it's agriculture is the conversion of ecosystems into people.
If all you've ever known is this system, and for most of us this is all we've ever known, is some version of this system of ongoing economic growth, of relative prosperity, of the promise that if we work hard and play by the rules, it'll all work out for us. And so for people who have worked hard and who have played by the rules, and now they've graduated from college, and maybe they've paid off their student loans, and maybe they haven't, but they're out there in the world and they're making money, and they're making enough money to keep gas in the car and to buy their food from the grocery store and pay for all the utilities and have enough money left over so that at the end of the week they can go out to dinner with family and friends. Well, it's all working really quite nicely. I mean, this is the payoff that they were promised and they're receiving it. So when it comes to the consequences, the costs of that way of living, people don't want to know, so they look away. If that way of living costs children in China much shorter lives, if it costs adults in China loss of fingers or legs because of the factory system, if it costs other species high rates of extinction or torture because they're part of the industrial food chain, well, most people are willing to look the other way because they finally realized the benefit of working hard within a fundamentally corrupt system. They didn't know it was corrupt. We were all born into this system. We didn't know there was anything wrong with it. We went along with it, never hearing a bad word about it. And then when you start to awaken, you realize, oh, there are costs and consequences for the way we live, that the entire society is structured in a way that is fundamentally egregious to some groups of human beings. Well, I don't want to think about that. I'll just put my head down and go on business as usual. And yeah, there are some people who wake up and try to change things. For the most part, they are punished by the corporations, by the corporate government, the corporate governments of the world. And so the radical, the person who gets to the root of things, is going to face significant adverse consequences. That's unfortunate.
Because something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
Through the United States, 50 million people died in 4 years between the sun and the disease. And that was when the first burning booths went up. It was a sanitation thing. You stuff the bodies in, burns it down to its base chemicals, and you get the $1.86 worth out of a little slot on the side. Huge lineups of people, trucks, stacked high with as many bodies as they could find, just waiting to cash them in. You could make $100 a day if you worked 9 hours burning bodies. But the cash incentive of the streets got clean pretty fast. That's where the first human resources companies came into play. That's where they got their startup cash. Burning bodies of the dead, killed by the plague.
There are people who know, and there's a lot of people who accumulate wealth by accumulating information. And many of these people have known for a very long time that the carbon dioxide and the methane we release into the atmosphere doesn't show up in terms of temperatures for 3 or 4 decades. So the changes we're seeing now were locked in 3 or 4 decades ago. Changes we see in 3 or 4 decades happen as a result of what we do today. There's a huge lag between our actions today and the consequences down the road in terms of the Earth's planetary system.
Suppose you're the CEO, you know, chairman of some major corporation in the United States. Your task is to maximize short-term profit and market share, period. If you don't do that, you're out and somebody else is in. In fact, in Anglo-American law, it's a legal requirement. But quite apart from that, you just have to do it or you're just not in that position anymore. It's a crime of the position, not of the individual. that means you've got to ignore externalities. In this case, the externality is the fate of the species. It means you have to try to convince people, you have to run big propaganda campaigns to convince people that global warming is a liberal hoax and so on, which is exactly what's being done. It's quite effective. And you take a look at the Republican Congress, just about everyone who came in is a climate denier. It's all a liberal hoax. We don't want to do anything. They're already cutting down funding, not only for U.S. programs, but even for the International Scientists Organization, been defunded. They don't want to do anything about it because the fate of the species is an externality. And if you're working in a market system, you don't pay attention to it. Well, in this case, there's no taxpayer to bail you out. Once you destroy the possibilities of decent human survival, kiss each other goodbye. And that's where we are right now. This is not an abstract consideration. It's happening right before our eyes. Now, those are serious problems, and it doesn't make sense to ask, is that person good or bad? There's an institutional structure which is lethal, harmful in the case of, say, financial institutions, but not lethal. Lethal in this case, and that's not the only one.
Well, what can you say? What can you say? The earth is being destroyed in every way.
I think of sustainable as the midpoint between things that are degenerative, in other words, things that break things down, things that pollute, things that destroy, things that damage, which is most of, well, many of our activities, a midpoint between degenerative actions and regenerative activities. And nature, of course, is the ultimate model of regenerative, things that make things better for their having been there. And sustainable is simply the middle. Another way of thinking of that is you can continue to do it indefinitely given the resources that are available. I guess that's really the typical operating definition of sustainable. But because we are in the degenerative side of things so much, we really need to be moving from sustainable to regenerative activities. I mean, sustainable, it's not all that great. You know, it just means you do it over and over again. If someone said, how's your marriage? And you say, oh, it's sustainable. Okay? I mean, it's not all that good. It's really not. So it's what we're shooting for. You know, we're shooting for sustainable, but we really need to be thinking much, much further.
Years of high school Aquanet hairspray use have done more damage to the ozone than any global warming scam has.
I remember Aquanet.
Aquanet. Every
I remember Brill Cream, but I don't think that had anything to do with the climate.
A little dabble, do you?
That, remember that?
There's more. The CO2 can also go boo, 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 boo.
This day, Madam Chair, marks a very crucial moment. We are 25 days away from the end of the first commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. But we don't really have 25 days. We have a few precious hours left. We are at a critical juncture. An important backdrop for my delegation is the profound impacts of climate change that we are already confronting. And as we sit here every single hour, even as we vacillate and procrastinate here, we are suffering. There is massive and widespread devastation back at home. Hundreds of thousands of people have been rendered homeless. And the ordeal is far from over. Madam Chair, we have never had a typhoon like Bopa, which has wreaked havoc in a part of the country that has never seen a storm like this in half a century. And heartbreaking tragedies like this is not unique to the Philippines, because the whole world, especially developing countries struggling to address poverty and achieve social and human development, confront these same realities. Finally, Madam Chair, I speak on behalf of 100 million Filipinos, a quarter of a million of whom are eking out a living here in Qatar. And I'm making an urgent appeal, not as a negotiator, not as a leader of my delegation, but as a Filipino. I appeal to the whole world. I appeal to the leaders from all over the world to open our eyes to the stark reality that we face. I appeal to ministers. The outcome of our work is not about what our political masters want. It is about what is demanded of us by 7 billion people. I appeal to all, please, no more delays, no more excuses. Please, let Doha be remembered as the place where we found the political will to turn things around. And let 2012 be remembered as the year the world found the courage to do so, to find the courage to take responsibility for the future we want. I ask of all of us here, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? If not here, then where?
Climate chaos is well underway. This is a series of assessments conducted by large organizations. As we go down the page, the predictions become increasingly catastrophic. They're based on more data and more sophisticated modeling as we go down the page. So by the time we get to the United Nations Environment Program from nearly 3 years ago, a long time since between major assessments, up to 5C by 2050. We haven't had human beings on this planet at 3.5 degrees C above baseline. So 3.5 C, 4C is almost certainly a death sentence for all human beings on the planet. It's not because it'll be a warmer planet. It's because the warming of the planet will remove all habitat for human beings. Ultimately, we're human animals. Like other animals, we need habitat to survive, and that habitat must include food. So without plankton in the ocean, there goes roughly half of the global food supply, because that's the base of the marine food chain. Without land plants associated with temperature extremes, cold and warm, the ability to lose land plants is growing rapidly. And there goes the other half of the food supply for human beings. If we have up to 5C by 2050, that'll certainly do the trick. U.S. Department of Defense finally gets on board, and in their latest assessment, which just came out about 2 weeks ago, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change concludes that global warming is irreversible without massive geoengineering. This is among the most conservative scientific bodies on the planet. And they admit that we have triggered runaway greenhouse unless we do some massive geoengineering. They don't propose what kind of massive geoengineering, because none have been attempted. No geoengineering strategies have been attempted at the necessary scale. So this sounds relatively dire to me, coming from this organization. The relatively good news is that these assessments do not include collapse. The bad news is they don't include the positive feedbacks or self-reinforcing feedback loops. When you roll a ball on flat land, the ball, because of friction, tends to stop. When you kick the ball over a hill, the ball goes faster. As it goes down the hill, it picks up speed. That's a self-reinforcing feedback loop. We've triggered 25 of those. None are included in any of these assessments, including that latest assessment from a couple of weeks ago by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that recommends geoengineering.
If you feel you are not properly sedated, call 348-844 immediately. Failure to do so may result in prosecution for criminal drug evasion.
Any preconceived notions about money or how money works or what needs to happen or any ideas of national power or responsibility. This is a human problem, and that's the only way we're ever going to be able to approach any kind of a solution.
Some of them were dreamers. Some of them were fools. We're making plans and thinking of the future. With the energy of the innocent.
turn to each other's hearts for refuge. In the troubled years that came before the deluge.
Everyone said that the world was going to end. Everyone said that everything was going to go sideways. And it did. The world did end. It's just nobody noticed. Maybe no one cared. We were too distracted by everything going on around us. We were too distracted by our own lives, but the idea is that maybe somehow, some way, everything was going to be okay if we could just change the channel.
People despair when they hear what I have to say, oddly. And so I respond with Edward Abbey's quote from 40 years ago. Action is the antidote to despair. Even if, especially if, we're all doomed, let's act. If you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, then do. Let's do. You've known since you were 10, maybe 12, right, that you're going to die? All of us in here have known this for quite a while. This is not some revelation. I'm not the first person to remind you, probably. But it's nice to get the reminder now and then that you're going to die. And so that maybe you should live as though the day were here. It's amazing what culture drives us to do, contrary to our humanity. So let's exhibit some humanity. Let's act. Action is the antidote to despair. Even if the action is hopeless, geez, it gives you something to do. You know, even if you live to be 100, it's nothing. Right? It's the blink of an eye. And when you're in your deathbed and you're 70 or 80 or 90 years old, you remember a few things. And not just because you're 70 or 80 or 90 years old. But because those memories are moments. The things we remember are moments. We don't remember whole days. You aren't going to walk out of here and remember a third of what I said. You're going to remember moments. And some of those moments are going to stick with you for years and even decades. So let's create those moments. Those moments that we want to remember. Those moments that make us proud to be us. That make us rise above our petty selves and become what we're truly capable of becoming as human beings.
We must not believe that we are helpless victims. We must act as if we make a difference now, because the only alternative is to lay down, give up, and die. And I'm not like that, and I know you're not.
Now let the music keep our spirits high. Let the buildings keep our children dry. Reveal its secrets by and by. By and by. When the light that's lost within us reaches the sky. Some of them were angry at the way the earth was abused by the
Now that Earth is in hospice, and all of us are in hospice, I think that points us, at least it points me, towards a way that we might want to live. instead of pursuing glitter, pursuing gold, pursuing material possessions, accumulating stuff, what I see in hospice is people acting with compassion and giving things away. What I see in hospice is people who are not looking for another pair of shoes. Instead, they're looking for somebody they can help. What I see in hospice is people acting with the kind of empathy, compassion, kindness, and courage that we are all capable of exhibiting. That when we look through history for heroic individuals, we look at those characteristics. That's what I see in hospice. So, the other little piece of advice that I give to people is to pursue what they love. Instead of pursuing what culture tells you to do, right, go to college, get the engineering degree, go to graduate school, make money, blah, blah, blah. Instead of pursuing those things that culture is screaming at you to do, why don't you instead pursue what you love?
Short-sighted economic profit is intelligent, reasonable, then please, God, make me a moron!
If you knew the earth was dying, if they said this on the news, if they would clarify the picture instead of seeking to confuse you. See the ice caps melting, if you could watch the oceans rise, you could see the consequences right before your eyes. If you knew the kids were dying, if you could look inside the river where their food comes from, filled with cyanide. If you could hear the parents pleading, if they were looking right at you, if you could see the anguish in their hearts. What if you knew? The bombs are falling, if they showed them hit the ground, if you could see the bodies flying, if you could hear the sound, if you could see the rubble where the hospital once stood, if you saw the child's lifeless limbs, would you hold them if you could? If you knew that they were lying, every time they spoke, for every laser-guided pinprick, there were lives lost in the smoke. If instead of just the generals, they had doctors too to describe the carnage of the cluster bombs, what if you knew? They were saying when they think you cannot hear, if you understood what they do, if for you it was so clear, if you knew they shut down the factory in an economic ruse, if you could kiss the cheek of the child in the sweatshop that made your shoes. Every time we went to war to fight our evil foes, they told you we were really fighting for the good of CEOs. If you could feel the hunger of the many, see the riches of the few, if they told it like it is, what if you knew? Living in a huge conspiracy, would you leave your suburbs, get out of your SUV? Would you hit the streets and fight for all our lives? Would you hold your ground when the stormtroopers arrive? If you knew that the whole planet depended on what you do now, would you take a man with the speed our times allow? If the pundits told the truth for just a week or two and real life was shown on TV, what if you knew?
Do you understand what I'm trying to tell you? There are no answers. Only choices.
The human race has to learn how to leave the world alone.